Nick, it's Q&A time. Let's go. We got a question.
These are my favorite. These are my favorite.
Mine too. We got a question from Hendra on YouTube. When's the next Q&A? It's right now. Let's go, Hendra.
Thanks for the softball.
First question, other than Hendra, from Dan M via email. And by the way, if anybody wants to send us questions, we will go through our comments on YouTube and the email address, fullgrainpodcast@gmail.com. You can email us your questions there. Hey guys, found the podcast, loving it. Couple ideas. How about an episode or part of an episode decoding some of the terms used to describe leather? I'm thinking particularly of terms used to describe leather's appearance. Sometimes I think I know what it means, but I'm not really sure. For example, sugary.
Yeah, and there are like a lot of made up or words that don't seem to make any sense, like sugary and like punky is what I've heard, and like torn, and there's a lot of, and like I have no idea. I mean, they seem to make sense like when you look at it, but you would never really understand where the word came from. But
punky's a new one for me. You want to start with punky?
I mean, I don't know. It's just like, I guess punky's kind of like everything's bad.
Yeah.
I'll attribute that one to John Culleton.
Is that kind of like raspy?
No, it's more like, it's like you just kind of have, you know when you see it. No, I don't know. It's like the break is kind of runny. Like there's another word. Like it's not like it starts to, like if you crease it, it doesn't really want to like crease in one spot. It just sort of like wants to keep going. And it can be a little bit rough, and it can, I mean, it's just sort of, it's kind of hard to.
Isn't a punk what you use, other than a genre of music, but isn't that what you use to like light things? It's kind of like a, it looks like an incense, and you like light stuff with a punk, like fireworks. Google sure. It. I think I might be right. I could be totally wrong.
Let's just go with that. Sugary is one. I mean, it's sort of you, when you finish it, it's kind of describing what the grain and the finish are doing together, and it looks almost like you're getting like little tiny, like individual like sugar crystals. I guess, I mean, look, you would see it and you're like, oh, that's, I understand why that's would be called sugary. So there's that. What else do we write down? Round is like something that feels like very dense and robust, and like you, when you bend it, it sort of gives you resistance and feels supple and full without feeling like it's going to collapse on itself. Like if you were to make it into something, I don't know. That's kind of hard.
You made me think of it. Maybe the antonym of that would be like raggy.
Yes. If something's like really soft.
Another term.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
like
that's
lifeless. No body. It just kind of like feels like it wants to just like fall apart.
Yeah. What else do we,
well, speaking of full, what's full's an interesting one. These are more like feel, descriptors.
Yep. Yes. Oh, yeah, he said appearance, huh? Okay, so yeah, bright is just means shiny, and dull just means matte.
This is not going well right now. By the way.
Well, I mean, there's any number of like descriptors that you could use for how like a pebble pattern looks. Like if it's a larger pattern or a smaller pattern, I guess that you could describe it different ways.
A cool visual like texture thing that we don't talk about a lot is like a hammered print.
Yep.
And a hammered print, if you can imagine a football texture, for example, or a basketball texture, those round peaks of the texture, you take a bit of sanding paper to it and you knock off the peaks, so you're hammering down the texture to be a little bit more flat. It's actually really, I think the hammer texture is pretty cool.
It's cool because you can do, we were just doing some football like that, and we did, because the natural football color is kind of like an oatmeal color, and so we finished the football black and then hammered it. So we would sand it off the tips of the pebbles, and then it was like an oatmeal color on top of, and then the black like all in the valleys. It's a pretty cool look. It works well, or I think it looks good in that high contrast scenario, but that's not for everywhere. So
it's pretty intense.
Yeah.
I mean, grainy is a good one because I think I use the word grainy as if I know what I imagine everybody knows what it means, but that is a really confusing one. Because I think people don't even really know what the grain is. But when I think of the grain, it's those small hair holes or where the hairs were before leather was leather. And you can have a very grainy appearance. Actually, I was looking at some horse woolly, Chicago woolly today. This is a lot of descriptors. Essentially, I was looking at some horse grain today, and it was super, super grainy. There's different methods of drying and even just inherent grain types that are more pronounced or will make the grain more pronounced. So for this example, I've noticed the grains on horse fronts or even horse butts are very, very intense. Those hair holes are really pronounced. And I'll just give one example of the drying method that makes it even more accentuated is the toggling of leather tends to make the grain less compacted. Into it's a little bit more of a raised grain, and it makes it even more further pronounced.
Yeah, it shrinks. It's allowed to shrink a little bit, so everything sort of shrinks back, and then it like stands up a little bit, I guess is like the best way to envision it. But yeah, horse is a good example because, I mean, so the grain, how grainy something is just a function of how coarse the hair is. So calfskin is very fine grain because the animals are younger and the hair is super fine. And then something like a horse hide, particularly like if you look at the mane, which is very, very coarse, like it's even the mane, you can easily tell the difference between that and the rest of the horse hide. So it can be pretty striking at times. But I think that, here's another term, draw. I think that sometimes people conflate draw and grain, because draw is like that wrinkling kind of effect that you get.
You see it a lot in the horse butts.
Yeah. It sort of looks like it's
spiderwebby almost.
I struggle with like providing a good like real world example of like what to compare it to. But, like sometimes you see like huge bald dudes that have like really wrinkly heads. Like it's kind of like that, I guess. Like it's like a structural thing. It's not
really
a
hair reaching on that one.
Thing. Yeah. I've been trying to, cause it's not the easiest thing to picture. If you don't know anything about leather, like if you haven't seen it, it's kind of hard to,
it kind of looks like a web of
sometimes. Yeah.
And it's not necessarily even a feel texture. It's more of just like a visual texture. And to contrast the term of draw against the term fat wrinkles, they sort of have the same visual characteristics, but the fat wrinkles, you can much more feel a difference in texture.
At least in the tannery, the differentiation between those two is a fat wrinkle is something that you can't really control. That's just inherent to the animal. Like, for example, you get a heavier like steer hide, the neck has fat wrinkles in it because it's just like, it was a big animal and like it had a big neck and stuff was creased up there. Where draw can be the result, can be inherent to the hide like that, but it can also be a result of the tanning process if things shrink, or mostly if things shrink too quickly, then things can sort of bunch up and get that look to it. Or if things are too hot or too cold, or you know, pH. I mean, there's a bunch of different ways. Usually it's if it's not something that's in the hide already, it's usually you've done something that you don't necessarily want to do.
But, correct me if I'm wrong on this one. It feels like fat wrinkles are often perpendicular to the backbone, where draw is parallel to the backbone, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, fat wrinkles, I think, are most often, I mean, since they're in the neck, yeah, they're perpendicular. And I think that draw is kind of like all, because if you look at some of the draw that you see on horse hide, it's like everywhere. It like doesn't really follow any. But maybe on other hide types, it's different. I mean, my experience is somewhat limited to the deer, bison, horse, steer world. Yeah, I guess that's...
I want to hop back. We were talking about graininess, and I recall in our last conversation with Nick from Stridewise, he was really into wild boar. And one of the things about the grain character on that boar is it's also very intense, but very patchy. Like, I can look at a... I'm actually not great at every animal, but I can look at many animals now and go like, that's a boar. You can quickly tell the difference in the grain character. And I think it's...
You can tell from looking at the leather or like a picture of the animal.
I can tell from looking at the leather.
Okay.
You can too, I'm sure. Like the pigskin stuff or the boar stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe.
It's like they're in like little patches.
Yeah.
Or ostrich is like very obvious.
Yeah, that's
these types of things. Yeah. So every animal has its own inherent grain character. There's a second part to Dan's email, which more or less is about hunting deer and then using the skins and home tanning. Are you familiar with home tanning, Nick?
I mean, I'm familiar with the concept. I mean, since I grew up in a tannery, I never really had to spend any time thinking about home tanning because I could just go to a tannery. But yeah, no, there's a number of different ways to do it, and I mean, vegetable tanning is thousands of years old because it was done. You can do it on a really small scale, you know, with sort of what you find around you in terms of the tree barks. I mean, oak is one of the things that gets used a lot, and that's everywhere, or that's in a lot of places. But I'm not super familiar with brain tanning. I know that he was mentioning that, and I know that's a very traditional thing, and it's one of those things that I see, and then I'm like, oh, I should research what that is, and then I just never do. I just never do. But I would assume that there's something, I mean, most definitely there's something in some sort of enzyme or something that's in the brain so that when you like rub it on the hide, it's doing something, something that you want from a preservation standpoint, whether that's from an like enzymatic standpoint. I would have to do some more research. We can go into like different types of tanning episode and we can talk about,
I've seen people do
go
it
from old to new.
Yeah, I've seen people do this sort of idea on their own, and I've seen YouTubers, there's a couple guys that show you how to do it. And if you're not too scared of ruining your stuff and putting in a bunch of work, you might want to get some books and try it, because some of that technology is not, I've never done it myself, so I guess I shouldn't speak out of turn, but it doesn't appear to be super technologically advanced. Like you could do it in like a little bin. You know,
yeah.
So maybe try out.
I think that if you can I should look it up. I don't know. Brains and salt and sunlight and something to stretch the hide on is probably all you really need.
Scrape the hairs off.
Yeah.
So a bit of work, probably pretty rewarding, especially if he's able to do some leather working after that with the deer skin. I would say it might be difficult to get a tannage that is appropriate for the examples that you wrote in here, Dan. It sounds like you're looking to get a wallet, watch strap, and gloves out of them. Sometimes the thickness can be a bit of an issue on some of those types of projects, and sometimes the temper can also be a further issue. So you might have like a really soft and drapey wallet, for example. Is drapey another word?
That's another word, yeah. Raggy. I think that's pretty self-explanatory, though.
Yeah, like it doesn't have any stand. It just sort of wants to fall over. So good questions there from Dan. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm going to do some more work on. I'm going to do some more research on brain tanning. I should have.
Maybe next episode we'll do a whole brain tanning thing.
I don't think so. Unless you got a guest.
We could actually. That's not a bad idea. Find a brain tanner. All right. Another one here from EDH Boulevard. Hey Nick, can you give some perspective on leather delays? My Nick's order has been delayed over a month due to Predator Orange not being delivered. WCF, Nick.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think this YouTube comment from EDH, I believe was back in December.
Okay. So hopefully we've delivered that by now, but maybe not. I don't know. It's funny, but
let us
funny.
Know.
But yeah. No, I mean, I think it's like any other manufacturing place. I mean, we are waiting to receive raw materials. And like, so for example, the Predator requires a certain kind of hide type, or is best suited, you know, there's a certain hide that's best suited to be made into Predator. So we order hides by the truckload, and then we sort them into individual sort of categories. So there's a category that Predator gets pulled out of. So we have to wait until that category has hides in it. It usually does. you know, and then it's sort of off to the races. It's, you know, are there holidays or are there other material delays? What time of the year is it? Does it take longer? Is it taking longer to dry? Did we get the color right the first time? Do we have to adjust the color in finishing? Do we make the color wrong completely in retanning? So we have to completely start over at that point. And then there's personnel. I mean, people, it's hard. It's hard to get steady people at this point. So we've had the desire to put more pieces through our facility, and we've been limited as of late by just in terms of qualified people. So that's definitely part of it. But you know, there's that I guess I would have to look at the order because I'm sure I could find out, but that's what I would assume on the Predator side of things. But if you look at, I mean, different products have different challenges. I mean, some take a long time and there's nothing that you can do. So if, you know, for like on the Cordovan side of things, like if we aren't able to get the big horse hides that we like at a certain point in time, then we can't make the stuff. And then the, you know, it's 6 months from the time we put it in. So delays are passed on in a very delayed fashion, but yeah, I mean, it's always unplanned. We give lead times or delivery dates based on, you know, historical experience, and they are often subject to change, unfortunately.
You went a few different ways that I wanted to go with that, but maybe I'll just leave it there because the next question is from Voltaine. That was emailed. Voltaine wants to know more about Predator. Speaking of Predator, maybe you could just describe what that leather is for me, but he's asking how the leather's made. He's heard it's made with hard waxes and just wondering how that leather was developed and came about.
That's a good question, actually. That leather is probably, I think it's more than 15 years old at this point. Maybe it's 20 years old.
My number was going to be 15, but I guess
I don't really know. Cause it was, cause I've been there for 15 years and that was already, and that's, you know, for us, that's newer, but that was already in, you know, in the books when I started full time. So I'm not sure what the development process was like for that. I think, based on how it looks, I would guess that maybe there were some new waxes or finishes that sort of come about, and we were experimenting with new products in that regard on an existing base tannage. And there was probably an initial promise that through the commercialization process got adjusted from start to finish until it was something that was saleable in terms of, you know, how soft it was and consistency and soft temper, how it looked and aged and all that stuff. So yeah, it's a chrome tanned leather with a hard wax on the surface, and it has like a distressed, somewhat distressed look. It has a little bit of pull up from the wax, but not as much as other leathers. Like Chrome XL has less than that, depending on the color. But it's very robust. It ages really nicely if you'll actually put the time into it to get it to age down. But yeah, I'm not surprised that it's not more widely used, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was more, if it started to get used a little bit more, because it's
awesome. It seems like people really like it. And I
like the name. We were talking about bad names last week, and Whiskey Predator is a really good name.
I have a recollection about this leather, and hopefully John Colleton listens to this and corrects me if I'm wrong, but I believe that this leather was originally developed for Timberland Boot Company, if I recall correctly.
And
I think you are also right. So it was sort of a look that I believe, I don't know if it was customer directed or tannery experimented directed, but I think you're right. Like a new wax, was it the H1 wax? I forget the name of the wax.
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
It's like a medium softness wax, and then they blended it with a harder one. So I think it's got a wax blend combo on it that's slightly softer than something that would be on the Dublin, which is more like a paraffin. So softer than a paraffin. But yeah, it kind of has that like chalky, distressed look to it that is definitely different. And I don't remember what the scene was like back then, but I think it was a pretty aggressive statement. I don't think a lot of people are doing stuff like that. And it seemed like here's another word, like a checked look, where you would get this white wax sort of break, was a trend that happened for about 10 years after that. And I remember talking to John about this. He's like, people don't like that anymore. And that sort of faded away like 5 years ago. I still like it, like a white checked look.
Like when you creased it and it goes white instead of...
Yeah.
That's a cool look. Yeah, you can put white, you can put pigment in with the wax. So when stuff creases it, that's one of the ways, but yeah.
Voltaine continues with the question about leather thickness regarding Predator. So does it come in a range of thicknesses?
Yes.
What's the range?
I think we've done up to 9 ounce. That's an interesting question, or it sort of leads into a different point where there are leathers that we do in like what we would say like a full range of weights, which would be, you know, like 3.5 ounce, like all the way up to like 12 ounce. And then there are certain leathers that we don't do that with. We're like, you know, lightweights only, you know, up to 5 ounce, because when you start to get onto the heavier raw material, it doesn't either, the break doesn't hold up well, or it doesn't lend itself to the kind of product that you'd make out of that heavier stuff, which kind of is a lead into the second part of that question about weights, because there are certain weights that are good for certain things and not for others. And there are looks and with boots and shoes, at least there are look like aesthetic looks and patterns that require, you know, some combination to achieve the desired end result. And I think that a lot of times they want, I think that the, what I'd heard is they talk about like the shoe, like package. So like the lining, whatever is in between the lining, if there is something, and then the upper, they want that to be like for most shoes, like most high quality shoes, they want to be like around 7 ounces. So depending on what you're putting together, like that sort of dictates like what you're ordering at what point. So if you have your upper leather figured out and this is what you want to use, then you sort of can figure out what else you need to pair with it. And then vice versa. You know, if you've got, I don't know, a Gore-Tex membrane and like that's informing what the finished weight is going to be, then you're going to talk about that first. And then, I mean, that's pretty thin, but you're going to talk about that first and then fill in around it. So the weights are, and he, in the question, he said, you know, some of the stitch down constructions use heavier weights, and the Goodyear welted stuff tends to be in a range that's a little bit below that. And then sometimes there are some guys that go even heavier. So it's a lot of pattern and preference, I would say, is the real answer.
I was just thinking that you started to hint at different shoemakers and different styles of shoe or boots might prescribe a different thickness for the upper and the liner. And it's my perception that the Pacific Northwest stuff has like a chunkier aesthetic, like very, for lack of a better word, tanky, like built like a tank. And if I recall correctly, a lot of that Pacific Northwest stuff is for the upper is just like 7 ounce. And I bet they're using like a 4 ounce liner. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of those, some of those aren't, the shafts aren't even lined. I mean, they're just what they are. But well,
that's actually the other thing, is like you can have a mega comfortable unlined moccasin made out of 5 ounce. So I think there's something there, at least from my experiences, the thickness of the leather. If let's say this as a simpler example, Chrome XL, I can make myself a camp mock in 5 ounce Chrome XL unlined, and it'll be super comfortable. If I made that same shoe with the same pattern in a 7 ounce, I think it would be slightly less comfortable. This is where my brain goes. I think at least out of the box. But then I think once you wear it, there's a break in time, of course. But I suppose that they become equally comfortable in the long run. But it's just a much longer break in period for the thicker stuff.
Yeah, I think that's. Yeah, I think it's again, I think it depends on the pattern, because we look, you know, look at like some of the leathers that we do for hand sewn specifically, because that's a good example. Or like a boat, you know, like a regular deck shoe or boat shoe or whatever, tends to be right in the weight you were talking about. But there's a lot of leather in that shoe. But then you've got a very similar shoe. I'm thinking about Quadi Moccasin had a ring boot, which was like leather all the way around. And that thing was, yeah, it was crazy heavy. And
I have something like that from them.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, but the pattern is different. It's got a different, it's laid out differently so that the heavier, you know, the heavier tannage or the heavier article works.
It's almost like, but it's unlasted too.
Yeah. They like people.
Is that a word? Not lasted.
Yeah. Maybe. I remember being at the factory and like they have to like space out hand sewing those, cause it like ruins people's day, cause they're so hard to sew, they're so beefy. But maybe that's part of it. I mean, it could be ease of construction. That's something I didn't think about right away.
Went slightly off script from the Predator chat there, but it's interesting how much Predator keeps coming up in comments. I need to get myself a pair of Predator footwear. Maybe from Nick's Boots. Another question comment here, Nick, from It's Me BK on YouTube. He is waiting for an Ashland Rose Anvil collab. And I think what he actually meant is something that I did not realize until I just read this comment. When I put it in our notes, I thought he meant something else. I think he was talking about the collab of that video that we did together. But what's funny about that is Weston messaged Nick and myself about doing a collaboration, Rose Anvil, Horween, Ashland collab, and we had a phone call about it, but haven't come up with anything yet. So the reason I put this in here is because I was wondering if people had any ideas for what a cool collab would be between the three brands. Definitely let us know, because we have some ideas, but I would be curious to hear what you would like. All right, another YouTube comment from a Google user. Question not related to the video. I have a pair of Mr. Lou boots from Baker's. They're Horween Black Horsehide. Does that mean they are horse butt, or are they strip, or are they from the front of the horse? Is all horse specifically not horse butt? Does it supply? It seems like it is very confusing, Nick. Break it down for us, the different cropped parts of the hide on a horse hide.
There's obviously the hides come in, they're whole, and then we cut them at picture the waist, I guess. And we end up with the fronts, which are thinner, like around like 2, 3, maybe 4 ounces at the most. And those are good for jackets and linings and some shoe uppers, as long as what we were just talking about, as long as you've got the right kind of materials going along with it and the right pattern. And then there's the back, which is what we really want, which is where the shells are, which will become shell cordovan. And so at that point, those two pieces go in completely different directions. You know, the butts get vegetable tan, and the fronts will go, I mean, they could be chrome tan for Chrome XL, or they could be, you know, any number of, or we've been doing some vegetable tanning, like shrunken stuff lately. That's pretty awesome. So they go completely different directions. They're totally different products. And he mentioned the strip, which is a piece of leather that is part of the butt that we've cut away from the front. That's not cordovan. So we don't know exactly where the shells are, how big they are at this point, because the hair is on, and we haven't done anything to expose the shells, because we've talked about how those are inside the hide, they're not on the outside, so we don't know exactly where they are. I mean, we have, from experience, we can kind of guess, but we definitely don't want to cut into those, so we cut ourselves a little bit of a margin, like of safety.
And by the way, that is the answer to his question, is they're made from the strip. For these particular boots.
Yeah, yep, yeah. So the strip gets cut away from, or we cut away some of the leather that doesn't contain cordovan, doesn't contain the shells, about 45 days into the process. And then that piece of leather we call the strip. So it's a pure vegetable tanned leather that can then be made into not so many different products, a few, but Chrome XL is one of them. Yeah, so I don't know exactly which boots he's talking about. I think I have some idea, but I think that those are from...
They're engineer boots with the black horse strip.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about that is like other tanneries call this the horse butt or horse rump.
Yeah. So like when you buy or when one, not you necessarily, you Phil, but when someone buys like horse butt from, I'll just say Merriam because they came up in the last episode. Like you're getting the whole back of the animal. You're getting the part that is shell and not shell. So when we sell cordovan, you're not getting anything that's not cordovan. I mean, that's like one of the things that we kind of like pride ourselves on is we're very careful at exposing and removing anything. So like that piece that you get, it might be compared to other shell cordovan places, it might look smaller, but it's like 100% cordovan instead of there being margins or the strip is still attached or something like that. But yeah, so that is like if you get horse butt from some other tannery, there's part of it that's shell and part of it that's not shell. So the strip is like, I guess like it's horse
not,
butt
not shell
junior horse butt light. Yeah. Cause it's still thick. It still has full weight compared to the front, but it doesn't include shell. So it's kind of it's a really nice leather and it's really very, very well, actually quite versatile if you kind of figure out how to use it. But the limitation is just the shape because it's like it's above the two ovals in the back and then behind the front. So it's sort of like what it's kind of like a, I don't want to say a leftover, but it's kind of like a between two worlds kind of
thing. I mean, the shape looks like a mustache and it can range in how wide that mustache is. So it could be like a Tom Selleck or like a French artist. I don't know. I can't think of what's a thin mustache.
Yeah, well, and yeah, they could be, they range in weight from like 5 ounce up to like, you know, over 9 ounces.
I'm talking about the shape of
So, but the weight is all over the place. And then that they could be 3 inches from top to bottom, or they could be 18 inches. And the it's like anything in leather, like the big ones, like the 18 inch that have good consistent weight that are not all scarred up. Like those are awesome and easy to sell. But it's like those 3 inch pieces that might be a little stained or whatever. It's like, what do you do with that stuff? Because we try not to throw anything away.
Yeah, they're just too small to cut any pattern pieces out of. And the selections are pretty rough often.
Yeah, we have to pick out the nice ones for boots. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I mean, there a lot of I think the best, some of the best patina that I've seen on specifically on like engineer boots and boots in that family are on like that the Chrome XL horse strips
there. I would say that awesome. Version of Chrome XL is maybe the best version because it's pit tanned Chrome XL. It's almost like Chrome XL in name only. It's like kind of you know, but it's just
it gets a little chrome, but yeah, it doesn't get chrome in the base tannage. Yeah.
It's a more dense version of Chrome XL. I do notice, as with most veg that's been tightly packed in, it tends to have a little bit more of a loose break when flexed, especially in the thick ones.
The
horse butt Chrome XL?
Sometimes. It depends. I think it's like just like every other Chrome XL. It's like it just depends on
there's a lot of factors. I think the compacting of it after, it's just my experience that the pit tan or veg stuff, maybe not all, but has more of a tendency to become loose, especially when it's rolled or glazed by packing in all that.
Maybe.
Sugary break, that has more of a sugary break as well.
Yeah,
it's
very
grainy.
I think it's it can be. Yeah, I think it's hard to be general, but that can definitely be.
All those negatives, I think that's the best Chrome XL in my opinion. Do you disagree?
It's good.
Do you like Chrome XL Classic better?
I do like. I like Chrome XL. I like OG Chrome XL. Natural, hard to top it.
All right, I got another YouTube comment here from We Wear the Mask, and they want to know about sneakers and casual shoes that use Horween leather. Actually, they asked for an entire episode on this. I'm going to make you do it in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some good, there's been some good stuff in the past. It's it sort of comes and goes, I guess. I guess it depends on also what you're thinking of with sneakers, because we've done, you want brand, like brand?
Yeah, I personally would like to buy some sneakers. So tell me who they are, what they look like, and where I can get them.
Yeah, I'm not, I should look at what's out there. I mean, in the world for sale right now, like I know, you know, Crown Northampton is out there, and Allen Edmonds, I think, has a sneaker type option, and New Balance does at times, and Adidas has in the past. I don't think they have anything now. And then there was a Converse. I was gonna say collaboration, which is always like such a kind term to the Tanner, because like they just told us what they wanted and we just did the work for, we just worked for them. But there were some cool Vans, like skate shoes, a number of years ago. And there's the Visvim stuff, which is a little bit off the wall, but those are some of those shoes are definitely sneakers. I don't know, who am I forgetting? I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody.
Other than New Balance, who's making a sneaker in the U.S. out of Horween?
I know Allen Edmonds makes things in a few different places, but I'm not positive where that shoe is made.
I know they do the Cordovan Park Ave sneaker. I bet that's domestic. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
You know, it's not. You don't see it in sneakers, our stuff in sneakers, as much, because it doesn't, it's not easy to make into a sneaker, because it doesn't want to be glued. In many cases, the traditional stuff, you know, Chrome XL, for example, like if you're going to vulcanize the shoe, you also have to sidewall stitch it, which is something you see less and less, because after a while, the glues get defeated by the high oil content. So there's a little bit of a difference, a little bit more of like an old fashioned sneaker, unless you use something with lower oil content, and then the glues are fine, depending on the glue and the prep to the leather.
I have a pair of the Dr. J Converse in, I think it's actually Beaufort Chrome XL. They're awesome. And they did, the one I have is mostly color 8 with black Chrome XL accents. And they did the opposite of that too, body of the shoe. It's like a high top. It was black with their burgundy accents. It's so awesome. I still like that. But I would say my favorite, and I don't know if you've seen this one, you probably have, my favorite sneaker that your leather has been a part of was some Latigo that New Balance did. And I believe it was like a 101 Latigo. Color number 101 is like a light brown. I think that's what it was. It's either that or like a light sand sort of color. My business partner Dan has those, and they're just so they're so awesome looking. And I guess they made them once and never did it again. I think New Balance does that, right?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, I think sneakers in general are kind of like that. We also did Latigo for them, the Visage Latigo, which was like yellow Latigo that we would finish brown on top, and then they would cut everything and then leave the edges all raw. So like the side of the New Balance end would be yellow, and they did it with, I'm just remembering two colors. They did that like brown, like kind of like a chocolate, like a milk chocolate brown on yellow, and then they did it with a black on a red. It was pretty
perfect. Plug for my brand, Nick. I was actually looking today. We're prepping out some new wallets for a private stock event, and this episode might come out after private stock. I'm trying to release the thing this week, and we did some black on red Visage wallets, and it's so cool.
It's cool.
I'll explain Visage quickly again, but there's a variation on Horween's Latigo where you mill dye it or drum dye it a particular color. So in this example, we're talking about red and yellow. So all the core of the leather is red or yellow, and then you stain a different color on the surface. That gives it a really cool just depth, especially like Nick said, when you don't finish the edge at all and just leave it all exposed, you get this look. And then there's a variation of that that's called sandwich Latigo, which I know other people make like sandwich versions of leathers. But that sandwich one is all done in the drum, which is equally interesting because they'll use a dye that penetrates all the way through the whole substance, and then they'll use a different dye with less in the tannage and the formulation of it, they'll won't allow the dye to penetrate all the way through. So you end up with, let's say, a red core with black on the bottom and the top, and that was all done like a Easter egg dying in the drums. The sandwich stuff is pretty cool, but it's
difficult to control. Stuff, use it. Yeah, use it. You use it. Like, there are certain dyes that and drivers that will push the dye all the way through to the center of the leather. And then, like, at the very end, you throw in black and you only run it for a few minutes just to coat the outside of everything. And it's kind of think about, I mean, everyone talks about T-core. It's like T-core, but then you're choosing the color of the core that you want. So it tends to be dark colors only because you're finishing over whatever color is inside, but it's cool. I like it.
It's super cool. Oh, we got another question here from Doran. Hope you're doing well, Nick. So I have a question regarding color on brown chrome excel leather. The boots in question are Allen Edmonds Higgins Mill. I've had them for a couple of years with some decent wear. Over time, I've noticed that one of the boots has stayed darker, almost chocolate brown, while the other boot has lightened a noticeable but not crazy amount, with a lot more red tone showing up with a lighter brown shade. Is this more of an issue with the clicking of the hides being different for each boot? Is there a way to lighten the darker boot, for example, sun bleaching, or it would be a good way to darken the lighter pair, like putting some color or Saphir boot cream on it? What do you think?
I mean, it could be a lot of things. It could be he could have a desk job and sit in the window, and like his left foot could be closer to the window, and the other one could be, you know, under his desk or whatever. I mean, I have a pair of boots that I've been wearing, the Woolly Chrome Excel Vibergs I've been wearing for the Thunderdome, and I was looking at my shoe and like the back of my one, the heel on one of the boots is like there's like no dye on it, and I was like, what am I? Like rubbing my foot against my chair, or like when I'm driving the car, is it like rubbing against the rug? And then I realized that, and it took me, you know, only took me 40 years to figure it out, that I always take off my left shoe first, and I take it off with my right shoe. So I'm scraping off, like I'm scraping the heel with the toe of the right boot every single time. And then I use my left foot to take off my right boot. So with my sock, so it doesn't happen on that side. So there's like a lot of little things like that, that add up or can add up, but it could have also been, you know, two different dye lots. It could have been, you know, Allen Edmonds, they're a big company, so they could have ordered brown chrome excel twice, and it would have come in, and it could have been two different batches, and could have, you know, been the same color on the table when they were cutting it, and they could have done a fine job, and it could have just been a variation from, you know, could have been our fault, or fault might not be the right word. We could have been from us in coloring, like the, or in dyeing, like we may have had to put an additional dye coat on it to make sure the color, you know, hit their standard, and then that would, you know, over time affect sort of the, you know, how it would wear. But I would say always, if you want to do something, the darkening is always better than trying to lighten. It's a more controllable process. But I would say if it's not bothering you, I just would just keep going. And there's going to be a point where they're both the same color. It all goes to sort of if it's the same, if it's almost the same color brown, they're going to go to basically the same color at some point. It might just take a while, but yeah, I mean, if you want to darken it, try it out.
Put a little, what would you put on there to darken it?
I'd have to see.
Yeah. Doran, send us a photo, man.
Yeah. Cause some dark brown, some dark brown tinted, I don't know,
something
shoe cream, and you know, dilute it with some natural shoe cream. But then you're putting shoe cream on, so you gotta contend with that. I don't know, it just depends on what it looks like. And
I'm pretty surprised to hear this, because brown chrome excel, from my experience, was pretty consistent
in terms
of color on the surface and the pull up. So that is a surprising one to me, but thinking of everybody doing the right job, it's possible that it did look different on the surface color, and then once they put it around to last, the color changed a bit. Or maybe the tannery missed a swab or something. I don't know.
No way.
Yeah.
No way. It never happens.
I honestly don't think I've ever seen that happen.
What, two different colors like that?
On one batch or one load?
I mean, I've seen it. Well, No, I've definitely seen plenty of shoes that don't match. I mean, it could have been those shoes could have been on display, and one of them could have been in the box, and the other one could have been in the window, even for like a couple weeks. And
see, that makes more sense.
May have not noticed it when we first bought it, and it could have gotten, because so that would be, you know, the sun is bleaching out or lightening the shoe that's in the window. But that's pretty common. I see that a lot, like with, especially with, I see it often.
You were about to trash somebody, I think.
I was about to trash my own product.
Well, I just know that there's been experiences that retailers have putting product in the window and trying to reorder that product that's been sitting in the window, change color. Yeah.
Yeah. I went to a retailer who I won't name, and they had a bunch of Essex just accessories, like underarm, like portfolios and wallets and stuff. And they had a whole section of blue wallets and stuff, but the blue was like gray unless you flipped it over and then it was blue again, because they had like it had just been sitting like in the window in one, like only up for a long time, so there was like a complete two-tone. It had taken all the blue, had been bleached out to gray.
Why is that Essex not so color stable? And I'll give you my story and I'll let you answer.
It's, well, there's two reasons. I mean,
Give you my story.
Okay, give me your story first. I thought you asked the question.
I said, let me give you my story, and then I want you to
respond. Sorry. Okay, all right.
I love natural Essex. I think it's the best wearing leather that I've ever experienced, but I've stopped using it for my products because it turns pink. And it's often very difficult to keep that lighter color clean, but that's not necessarily exclusive to Essex. But it seems very much unstable for color. I'll let you respond. You have 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You have 2 minutes to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
Do you agree?
Yeah, sometimes. I think that it can get pink. I think it does tend to darken, keep darkening though, is in the sunlight. And if you are using it, it'll keep going and it won't stay. It can get a little bit nude or buff colored, and then it'll keep going and it'll get dark brown. But that's that darkening that's happening from the oil and dirt and ultraviolet, that's affecting the tree barks that are in there. You know, it's darkening. It's just, you know, it's just like the same thing, like if you were to just like put a piece of wood in the window, like it's not going to stay. You know, it's not going to stay looking like a new piece of wood. It's going to darken. It's going to start to darken and oxidize and
counterpoint. Fade. Allow me to respond.
Point, counterpoint.
I notice if I keep the natural Essex, well, this might be partially to your point, but if I keep it in a sealed plastic bag, it doesn't change. So I suppose it has something to do with the air or oxidizing.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same. Yeah. Yeah, I think that, so that's the case with natural. So if natural leather tends to get darker, and then darker leathers will often get lighter because you're not changing the underlying tannage. You're not affecting the tree barks. You're affecting the color that's been applied to it, and that wants to go the other direction. So greens and blues and burgundies, in my experience, tend to fade. They just are more susceptible to UV for whatever reason. But there's a bunch of ways to get around that. I mean, you can put it on top coats that are UV resistant, and I mean, even if you just know that might happen, then you can manage it a little bit. You know, don't buy a blue chair and put it in your window if you want to stay blue.
It's just a real shame, because I, again, loved the patina on that natural Essex and stopped using it. Do you have I should know the answer to this if it exists, but do you have an alternate product?
Not really, because I think that to kill that pinkiness, we'd have to change the retannage, and it would just be a different product at that point. I think we'd have to adjust the bark blend. So a direct replacement to Essex? I mean, not.
You should get to work on that one. I think there's. You know how much I love like the horse butt strips that are not the Chrome XL version? I think a horse front pit tanned, just a pit tanned horse, natural horse front would be pretty sick. And I suppose the challenge with it would be the weights and the selection. So you're not going to sell much of it except to me. So that.
Yeah, it's going to take a long time, and the raw materials not super predictable, and
yeah,
it's not. It would be awesome, but it's not like a very commercially viable option. But that doesn't mean we wouldn't do it, because we do stuff like that all the time.
I'm taking over the Q&A, Nick.
Sorry, you're asking questions, and then I don't think you're taking over. I think we're.
I'm just so selfish because I want better leather, I want more interesting leathers. Which, by the way,
we just touched on some one of the reasons that you can't always do everything like crazy, because is it cost effective, and like, can you sell it? I mean, because we develop stuff all the time. We're like, this is awesome, and it's $9 a foot, and then no one's like, it's awesome, but no one's gonna pay, you know, whatever the price is that you have to charge for it. And that's just like, okay, we're just not gonna.
I hinted at one of those things earlier when we were talking about grain character. Your dad developed, I don't know if it is old, but he has a piece of woolly horsehide finished like Chicago. So it's finished.
Yeah, no, it's not that old, but yeah.
I mean, that
it's cool.
There's no market for it, but it's so nice. It's so nice. But it's just so thin.
We can't make enough of it for it to be interesting for anybody. I mean, like, I think we had, you know, like 50 horse hides that were like, oh, these are really thick, and they're like, don't have any holes in them. Like, we should just make something cool. And then we make it, and then it sits on a shelf for 3 years, and then we find it, and we're like,
this is awesome.
Let's figure out what to do with this.
Your dad wanted us to make something for him, so we did. And then he's like, hey, take the rest of it and make some stuff for yourself. So we made a private stock wallet again. Nice. I've been smelling my own farts here, but it's maybe the coolest like grainy leather that I've seen. So props to you and Skip. Let's go. Let's keep sniffing those farts and move to the last question here from Stuart Wallace, which I believe this is a YouTube comment. And Stuart wants to know, why don't we hear more about Helm or Rancourt? And I thought this was a really appropriate question, because I feel like we don't talk enough. I don't know a lot about Helm, but I feel like I know a lot about Rancourt, and we never bring them up.
I try not to, in general, like just to single out brands, like for better or for worse, just because I think that everybody is good at doing different things, and I don't want to seem like I even can pretend to know or tell them how to do their business. But yeah, I mean, there's a ton of good manufacturers and makers out there. I think, I mean, Rancourt is interesting because there aren't very many people doing like the traditional main hand sewn anymore. And I think, I mean, they might be the only ones that are left that are doing it at any kind of scale. So that's interesting, but
it's all, it's interesting and sad that such a huge thing is not so huge anymore.
Well, nobody, I mean, there's an interesting aside there. It's like, it's in order to make like a true traditional hands-on, it's expensive. And there's a lot of leather in that shoe that you don't even see, because it wraps all the way underneath your foot. So it's kind of like a shoe. Someone was describing this. It's kind of like a shoe that's upside down, like where normally you've got the upper that's stretched over the last, and then you're sewing like a midsole underneath it. Like a hand sewn, you're cutting the vamp, the front part, and then that's wrapping underneath your foot, and then you're putting like the plug, which is like the top that goes over your toes, you're putting that on top of the shoe. So that's what it means. It's a moccasin. So if you didn't put a sole on that for, you know, a boat or whatever, then you could still walk around on it, because it would be leather all the way underneath your foot. So that's a very expensive way to make shoes, because there's all this leather in it that you don't even, that the customer doesn't even see. So there's a lot of the, you know, quote hand sewns that are out there they're kind of like faux hand sewns. Like the leather doesn't go all the way underneath your foot. I mean, it's still, you know, they've sort of adjusted the pattern to use less leather. It's not something that you would necessarily see, but when you wear it, it's different. It's definitely different. To make it that old, the traditional way is, it's better, but it is not as cheap to do it that way.
They got some beautiful looking stuff here. I haven't looked at their website in a while, I remember maybe they stopped doing, I'll speak out of turn here. I remember they were doing a lot of Blake Stitch stuff. I think they even had a boot called a Blake boot that I do not see here anymore. So maybe they bailed on that. But the moccasins, are these moccasins? Loafers and, yeah, moccasins. Stuff looks nice. I mean, it looks the same as it's looked when I was into this more heavily, you know, 15 years ago. It's awesome.
That's the way the boot shoes work. Yep.
I will say, a competitor of Rancourt's from Oak Street, I will say the most comfortable things I've ever worn are unlined brown chrome XL boat shoes. Or they were like the five eyelet, whatever. I forget what he called them. But it's ultimate comfortable. I love those things. And I should get some more because I've really worn them out. But yeah, we don't give enough props to Rancourt. And that was something I was thinking about when we were talking to Nick at Stridewise too, is it seems like there's a lot of interest in new and exciting, and that's not, sort of not Rancourt, right? Like, it seems like there's a lot of content made. Indonesia's sort of a new thing, right? And that's very exciting. It's kind of boring to talk about, like, I love Alden. It'd be pretty boring to talk about Alden and make a video about an Alden shoe that's existed for 100 years and hasn't changed.
I disagree. That's a reason that's not boring.
I don't know, like, how much content can you get out of that, right? You get one. That's it. It's all, and it would be great.
But I mean, how many different, you think they're inventing new ways to make shoes all the time?
Yeah, well, new ways, yes, and it means patterns can change, mm-hmm. the material selections can change, colors can change. I don't know, maybe, I just feel like there's these older brands, Rancourt, for example, that it looks like they're trying actually to do some new stuff. Like, I'm seeing some cool suede colors, and I'm noticing that Blake boot's not there anymore, but it does seem like they've identified, we've got some of these hits and they're just going to make the hits, but they're not doing monkey boots, right?
No. No, it's not their, that's not their thing.
I guess they don't have
they're not that old a company though. They are
Rancourt?
Yeah.
Older than me.
2009.
What? Okay, yeah, I've been doing a lot there longer than Rancourt.
No, you haven't. Because they're the current factory, the current iteration is from 2009, but the family and Mike Rancourt they've been making shoes for forever. Since the 60s. So yeah, a while.
Yeah, I bet you this. Some of the styles they're doing today are the same styles from back then.
Yep.
All the hand sewns. Anyways, I don't have a fully formed thesis there, but I was thinking a lot about, you know, what's interesting to talk about in like a YouTube video, or what's the coolest thing to post on, like what you're wearing for the Thunderdome, right? And like, it'd be kind of, I don't know, I would wear it, but you're not going to get a lot of style points for having something that people have seen, right? I think that's what I'm getting at, is whatever.
That, I will say, that is a detractor for me for that forum. Is like, it's just like, what's the weirdest thing?
Yeah.
What's the most exclusive thing I can get and wear?
I mean, that's cool too, though, right? I mean,
it is cool.
I get it.
It's cool, but I think it, I mean, for me, I mean, I guess, of course I'm going to say this, but I want to see 15 different pairs of natural chrome XL worn 15 different ways. And I want to see how they're different each time. Like, I want to see a painter and a construction guy. And I want to see, you know, someone that drives for a living, or like, I want to see, and I want to, like, at the end of it, I want to see how different do they all look. Cause they'll all have wear on them, but like, which, you know, which one do you like? So I think that's interesting to me, but
you identified the other thing that bothers me about the Thunderdome. One of the other things, there's a couple things that concern me about, like, that don't make it for me, but it's a 6-month process, right? You pick your boots, you wear them from new to 6 months. That's like not even the start of the journey for me. So like, I'm more interested in that painter after 6 years, right? I think that's much more interesting, but that's a much harder event to have. So Somebody posted a photo for 6 years. So that, I guess that's my problem with this. Like, I ended up, I have so many things that I love that I've had for over a decade that I just don't, I can't wear them all. So I'm like, I just want to keep wearing the stuff I already have. I like it. I've been wearing, I guess he's in town tomorrow. I've been wearing my Cordovan Rancourt plain toe. It's like, man, I miss these things. And it has been a winter time here, and so I haven't had much chance to wear a boot like that. And I missed it, and I was wearing some other stuff. It's just like, I have so many things like I already love. I don't want to get, I do want to get those monkey boots that we talked about in the last episode. But
it's funny you said, like, I was texting with Brett today, and then I missed my chance to call him because I wanted to call him and get his comment on, or like just his take on what came up in the last episode.
Oh, about how he was sort of trashing Viberg for no reason.
Just like the change in the the perceived change in the last, well, according to them, like 8 or 9 years, like if there, or 7 or 8 years, if they're, even if there, or if there was a change, or if it's just been, they have different pictures and their prices have changed. I mean, because that's,
I mean, it seems to me like the only thing that people could, I guess I haven't seen many of their shoes, but the ones I've seen look really nice. And I think the thing that is very easy to pick apart from them is the price is really high. So I kind of get it, but
yeah. Well, Nick was from Stridewise was saying like the quality to price to like style
was great.
Like they're like right in the middle of that Venn diagram. That's like a really good, if you look at all three of those, it's like a very good value, but it's still, I mean, it's still a $900 boot or whatever it is, or 800, 780 or what. I mean, I think they're all different prices, but
pretty expensive.
It's an expensive,
I would say very like in line with some of the Edward Green type pricing, though. I don't know if he's looking at them so much, or like a European. Yeah, well,
I think Green's more expensive, but it's also a completely different, like radically different piece of footwear in my.
Oh, for sure. But it's the, it's the finishing of a non-Pacific Northwest shoe in the form factor of a Pacific Northwest boot, right?
So you're saying he does more finishing?
I think his finishing is pretty refined. And I like it. And I don't think that's not what he was doing before. He wasn't doing a lot of the rolled edges. He wasn't doing a lot of like a stained and waxed and like really nicely polished and filled in like midsole to outsole, like that area.
Yeah. I like the blend. I think the Pacific, like the Pacific Northwest stuff is nice and I like it, but I don't find it like, and it's, well, I think for date, like day to day, especially for me, it's great because I'm not a fancy person. I don't work in a fancy place, but for like, if you wanted to have something that's more versatile, I think that going a little bit more refined is good. But I mean, if you have 50 pairs of shoes, I mean, like whatever.
I don't know. I have the pair that I have from him are of the old Viberg that are less refined and I love them. I just kick them around. I like not having to worry about my stuff.
Yeah,
and I also like when things get beat up. So I'd rather have a smaller price tag, but I don't know if it's actually for me. Like I'm not the guy.
Yeah, I don't know how much of that is. It would be interesting. I'm never sure if you'd be able to get like a straight, accurate answer. Like how much of that is customer service? Like how much of the price of the boot is? Just dealing with the crazies that are like the stitch is 13 degrees off. Like I gotta send these back. These aren't perfect. So I mean, if you're mailing boots back and forth all day long because people have such high expectations of your work, I mean, what does that do to your price? It doesn't have no impact.
I'm a little worried about what you just said. You triggered me, Nick.
I'm just saying,
these people are crazy. I think they should get what they think they paid for.
I think that I agree with you. I just think that there are sometimes, and I'm sure people are going to be like, well, if I'm going to spend $900 on a pair of boots, they should be perfect. It's like, okay, well then, I mean, maybe they should, but you have to think about like who's making them and how they're made too. Cause there's a certain amount of, I mean, if they're handmade and they have to be handmade to be to go through that construction process. And part of the price is coming from the fact that they're handmade and they're that construction. Then there are some sort of like human elements to it that are just inherent to the fact that a human was involved. So to want something that's perfect, I think is a fantastic goal. And like, you can always aspire for that. And I think that that's the shoemaker's job, is to try to make something that's as perfect as possible. But to get something that's not totally perfect, and then to be like blown away and like, you can't figure out why this is happening to you, I think is a little bit misplaced. But
I get you.
Bring on the, I'll respond to, I'm sure there'll be people that are saying, you're only saying that because you never have to pay for your shoes.
Yeah. Well, to echo what you're saying about the customer service cost,
I pay for my shoes, by the way.
The if you recall from a year ago, we had Wyatt and Josh in from Grant Stone, and they said one of the most expensive parts of their footwear is the customer service. And I think even since then, they've added on, because I interact with them, and I think they've like doubled their staffing here in Michigan. And I think it's mostly customer service people. I could see why that would happen. I have a lot of customer service questions too. It's because the sizing must be such a disaster for footwear brand, and then they're using materials that are not plastic, you know, not the same necessarily every time.
I think they were saying like they'll send shoes for someone to try on, and they'll like wear them for like wear them around the house for the weekend, and then they send them back and like, these don't fit. And they're like, yeah, but you wore them. Like, they're all creased up. It's like, well, I didn't wear them outside. It's like,
My brother gets so mad at wallet customers. We'll take back a wallet if it's, you know, unused for a full refund. And sometimes we'll get them back. And it's like, like so obviously worn.
Yeah, I came like this.
My brother goes crazy. What are you going to be telling me? You never wore this? You get so mad. But it's part of the gig, man. I mean, if it was a great... So that's the thing with my product, and I'll throw myself under the bus. Like, if it was an awesome product, if it worked for that guy, he wouldn't have sent it back. Like, if it was worth it to him. You know? Yeah. So I just look at that as like, hey, we could have done better then. But like, sometimes it's like, you know, it's just not the guy's style, right?
Yeah, sometimes there are some people out there you just can't make happy. Also, and there's a percentage of those that you are going to deal with. And what you going to do?
You're one of those people, Nick.
Am I?
No, you're not. You're a cool guy.
I got very nervous.
Do you want to do any favorites? Do you have any favorites? Or should we just go to bed?
I was trying to think about a favorite on the way over here, and then I started thinking about something else. Maybe if you have something,
I have something.
Jog my thoughts. Yeah.
I am buying every favorite episode from here on out to reference this band until they organically hear about us and come on the show. But I really like Fallujah, and they
have done this once before.
they just announced that they're doing a 10th anniversary remaster. I'm not sure if it's a remix and remaster of The Flesh Prevails, which is my favorite album that they have, and I've been listening to it since they announced that, like every day for the last week. It's so good. And I'm going to drag my wife, who does not like technical death metal, to go see this show in Chicago.
Shocking.
Yeah. You should come, Nick. You want to go?
Sure. I like Fallujah.
Oh, so good. And Fallujah, if you're hearing this, come on the show. I'll talk about you every episode until you show up.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to reach out to you. You have to, somebody has to find you that knows like your buddies and send them to the show.
That's funny.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, no.
Austin, my bandmate, runs Audio Tree. I told him, I was like, you got to get Fallujah in the studio, because it would be awesome. It's just, it's really interesting. The larger, and they're not even a huge band, Fallujah, but the larger these artists get, the more barriers there are between them as individuals and the stuff that they can do. So you have to the band has to go through their management to go do anything. It's, I don't know, it seems like a disaster. It's like when I reach out to people to be on the podcast, and they're like, let me, you have to talk to my assistant first. It's like, okay, I get it. You're big time.
Yeah. I've got one. So you told me, I think you told me, was it last, you said last episode or a couple episodes that you have some Merriam boots from Grandstone?
From Oak Street. From Oak Street. Natural horse run.
So I'm going to plug a non-Ashland wallet.
No, good.
So I've got, like, from time to time, I'll, and this is a plug, but also a favorite. But
I hope
but from
it's time price, to time,
it is, nice. Yeah, it yeah. is, yeah. From time to time, I'll come across like a shell or two, just like through production, and I'll be like, "Well, that's really nice. Like it's super smooth, or like the thickness is really even, or the color is, if it's a marbled, like the color is like really awesome." And I'll just like pull it out for like no reason other than I want it, which is a crazy thing to still experience. Like, I have worked at a tannery and like lived at a tannery your whole life, but so I'll pull it out. So I end up with like these little stacks of like interesting stuff. And I had one of those like piles of like, it was, you know, probably 12 shells of like all different, but I took a few of them and I sent them to Kreis in Germany. Cause he's made some wallets for our site in the past. And I was just like, just make as much stuff as you can out of the stuff. I was like, these are the products that I like just get like, just waste as little as possible. So he sent me like a whole batch of stuff. That I've taken pictures of that I haven't put up yet. And it's marbled color 8 and color 4 and glaze natural. And just like some, it's like really, really awesome stuff. And like in, and everything like keychains and NATOs and wallets and like sunglasses cases. And it's, so I'm going to put that stuff up. But
can you take me one. And like, oh, never mind. Yeah. Is that color 4?
This was unglazed natural when I started.
Sheesh.
Yeah, it's gotten super dark.
I was going to say,
I've been carrying this for,
send me some like, photos that I can put on the video here.
Yeah, I've been carrying this one for maybe a year, but it was, I mean, as light as it gets when I started with it. But so anyway, so that's a favorite because I was going to swap wallets the other day, and I was like, nah, I'm just liking this one because I think I mentioned also I've got like a box full of wallets that I have worn like more wallets than anyone needs, but
yeah
so you, Christ, so it, and even you know if you don't, yeah,
or two.
Even if you don't, I mean, look, you can like, there'll be some stuff up, I'll have some stuff up for sale soon in that, like this wallet specifically, and then a couple others, but just if you're looking for, like, he makes bags and belts, and it's just stuff is just really nice.
Is very it like christlatermanufacturer.com or something, yeah, like that,
yeah.
And then your stuff is on genuinehorween.com if people want to check that out.
Yeah, horween.com. But if you just go to horween.com and click on shop, it'll take
you. It's not genuine. Let me look that up.
It's just Horween products.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
I may also have genuine Horween products.
Look at all these sold out brushes.
I know, I gotta get some more stuff.
Who makes the brushes?
Solgarb in California. Yeah, they're cool.
Those headphones are not doing well, huh?
They're not so good. I missed the mark on that one a little. I mean, they're awesome headphones, but I just think that that's a tough market. The more I look, there's so many awesome options that it's hard to stand out. And it's not, I wasn't really working to stand out. I just did something I thought was cool.
I will say, I'm an in-ear, as you can tell, I'm an in-ear guy, but those are really nice. They definitely put you in the room.
I liked them.
Yeah.
I like these a lot, but they're not as expensive. They're a little bit.
I have to apologize to you. I've only used that headphone amp you gave me, the USB-C one, like 3 times. I kind of like it too.
Yeah. I like it. I was using it before we started. I was listening to music with it.
I never listened to music with
this thing.
Yeah. I never have a USB-C device to listen to. I'm always listening on AirPods on my phone, and I have the old phone with the lightning.
Yep.
Old. It's not even that old. Anyways, thanks for another episode, Nick.
Thanks.
Everybody, thank you for checking out the show tonight. People have sent in questions. We really appreciate that. And like Nick said, it's our favorite thing to do. So please keep the questions coming. And if you have suggestions for what we should do as a collab with Rose Anvil, that'd be good to know. And let us know who you want to see on the show. If we got some, I've reached out to people that you have suggested to try to get them on the show. And I will reach out to people if you ask me to have them on the show. So please keep sending those. I appreciate it, guys.
All right, I have one more thing. I will say I did get one email through our site from a Dr. Edward Santelli, and I don't have a great answer to your question today, but I will reply to your email.
Oh, wow. A bonus question at the end. You want to read it?
No, it's about Marine Field Shoe and some of the places that are around the country that may have used it. And he was asking, because I think some of his family members were in the industry, and he just was asking for a little bit of info. And
tanneries that made it?
Tanneries and shoe manufacturers. I need to do a little bit of digging to give him like a satisfactory answer, but I wanted to say I got your email. I wanted to shout him out. But
man, that'd be
cool. Thanks for the email. Yeah.
You'd like tie up the family tree for this guy.
Yeah. Well, I don't think so, but it's cool. It's a cool question.
Yeah.
To answer.
All right, Nick. Have a good night, man. Bye.